Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I'm hoping I don't have any connection issues because I'm recording from home today and my Wi-Fi isn't great here. Oh my god, look at this fucker.
Let's go, legend!
Oh my god. This looks like...
Dude, I've been staring at one monitor for the last fucking 36 hours in a row, and my eyes just went. So now I'm sunglasses 24/7.
I was gonna say this looks like 3-day bender Mahesh over here.
It's as soon as Bitcoin hit the all time high, all work went to the side, and watching of the screen commenced.
Oh yeah.
And 2.5 days into it, my eyes just started burning. So I went for the sunglasses.
You need that. Those like blue light glasses that don't actually do anything, but people wear just because they think it does.
My parents have like 5 pairs of those. I don't know what it is, but my mother is just like utterly convinced that like blue light is the reason that she's not able to go to sleep at 8:30 p.m. when she sleeps 10 hours a night. But you know, to each their own. I mean, I guess there's people buying dog coins out there, so blue light glasses aren't that crazy and retrospect.
Yeah, this is blowing my mind because I have currently zero exposure to meme coins.
What?
No.
You? How do you not have meme coins?
I don't know, man. And it,
do you want to be poor?
Yeah, I'm like, I'm slowly understanding the barbell strategy of like meme coins and AI, but like, it's hard for me to like, I don't know. I just can't wake up in the morning, like buy meme coins and then like tell my parents what I'm doing with like that, like a sum of money that big. But I think I need to just pull the trigger at some point.
That's a mistake. Yeah. You need to stop giving a fuck what your parents think, bro. You're a personality in crypto at this point. You've already made it. Depends on Bloomberg.
That's true. What do you have? Whiff? Bonk?
I had a couple of coins that I've been holding for some time that I ended up mooning in the last few weeks. And I did like the crazy degen thing of like when things go up and you're like, oh, this isn't real money. So I just aped all of my gains into like a couple of political coins and Whiff and a few others. Sure. And, you know, some of it has gone well, some of it has gone badly. I think my favorite one I was telling Connor earlier is like, there is like, all I could describe it as is like idiot Trump on Solana called Tremp.
Yeah.
And they have fucking hilarious memes. Like their memes are actually fire. So I aped a lot of money into that, realized I bought the wrong one. And so then I've like slowly been trying to sell out of the wrong one into the right one. But it's funny because like once a day someone makes the same mistake I do. And I see the price on that thing spike 15 times. So, like, if I'm watching the screen for long enough, I think I'll actually be able to get out. Hence the glasses.
Yeah, so other idiots like yourself are basically your exit liquidity, where you can go into the real Trump token.
It's the barbell strategy, as you mentioned, right? There's, like, the smartest shit in the world in crypto that we're doing in the fund, and that is the deepened stuff. And then there's the dumbest shit in the world that I'm doing in my PA, and I just told Sal I looked at my bank balance a little bit earlier and it might have actually flipped negative because I've yeeted so much into meme coins at this point. But life is good, boys. We're flourishing.
Yeah, I'm a Tremp holder as well. I believe in the Bowdoin versus Tremp thesis is going to play out this year with the election. I think Trump will win over Biden if that's kind of our two last candidate choices. So hopefully my bags do well, if that's the case.
I feel like every time something good happens, like Trump will pump. And every time Trump does something just absolutely just crazy, Trump will pump. And I can't wait for that dichotomy to kind of play out.
Yeah, this is going to be the new like presidential prediction market, right? Trump and Bowdoin.
Well, it's a really interesting one because prediction markets for politics are actually pretty frowned upon regulatorily. Mm. So the question is, I mean, this isn't really a market. It's just like idiots throwing money around on the internet. Question is, how do you end up going about regulating it? I'm sure that'll come up sometime in the next few months if this starts to get big enough. But I'm honestly excited about the other side of this, which is that like if these things get really big and like the candidates realize like, holy shit, we can tap into this like crazy retail zeitgeist to raise money and run our campaign. Like I'm hoping for like some sort of an airdrop later this campaign for to drive activity. I think you just start like asking questions of like, is that paying for votes? And you start to get into some pretty hairy territory.
Yeah, there was some other Trump meme coin where like they airdropped, they basically figured out his wallet when he did the NFT drop. And so they figured out his wallet and then sent him basically like 20% of like the meme coin supply. And so, yeah, like I'm kind of just waiting until he like realizes how much money he has just like sitting in that wallet and then decides to just like liquidate it and then use it for his actual campaign. But to your point, yeah, I don't know the regulatory constraints there.
It's also that like if he put out like a Trump running for president NFT collection, people would eat that shit up. He could raise a lot of campaign money really quickly, especially in the middle of the country, and get a ton of adoption pretty quick. So I don't know. I'm excited about all the political stuff at the end of the day. I think it has a lot of room to run. But part of what we're doing today, guys, is we're doing a bit of a special episode. I think, you know, three of the best minds in DPIN that are extremely connected have been spending their time at ETH Denver this past week. So for all our listeners out there, you know, we wanted to do just a special episode to maybe go through some of the stuff that we were seeing on the ground at ETH Denver, some of the things that were really exciting us. And the way we're going to do this is really just to try to structure alpha about things that, you know, you might not see on Twitter, you might not see through social media, but that were really happening on the ground. So, you know, we're going to go through a couple questions here, but I think more than anything, Sammy, Sal, and Connor are just going to share like a lot of the on the ground of what they were really seeing. And, you know, let's maybe go a question at a time and we can take this in whatever direction we end up going. But, you know, to start out with guys and maybe to start with Sammy, it feels like would be great to just kind of compare and contrast, you know, this year versus last year and what you guys saw that was really different.
Yeah, so this was actually my first ETH Denver. I really haven't been to, too many conferences. Like I went to the Bitcoin conference last year, which was a mistake. It was just a bunch of maxis walking around. But I went with the intention that like people would be talking about Bitcoin L2s and like other types of developments happening with ordinals. I think I was a little bit too early there because now the Bitcoin L2 conversation has really taken off. But yeah, so this was my first year at ETH Denver. And just from talking to people who had gone like previous years, there were just so many more DPIN and AI events. I think last year, IOTX may have been hosting the only DPIN event. Correct me if I'm wrong, Connor, because I know you were there. But this Pretty year, much. I think every day there was like a DPIN event, as well as like an AI event as well. So like I was basically running around every day, just hopping to like different AI and DPIN events. And the energy was crazy. And obviously, like the people who were at these events were a bit biased because they're at the events that like they're most excited about. But like the two narratives that I just heard from everybody were AI and DPIN. Like nobody's mentioned, no one's talking about DeFi. DeFi is the mid curve, by the way. Like, you know, you've got the meme coins on the left curve, AI on the right curve. You know, let's put DPIN and AI on the right curve. And then you just got like DeFi in the mid curve. But yeah, nobody could give a shit about that. Nobody could give a shit from the people I talked about, like these high throughput blockchains and so on. So yeah, vibes were good. I mean, it helps when the market's pumping. But yeah, I think this is like going forward, there are going to be just so many AI and DPIN events at these different conferences. And really excited to see how it continues to play out.
Yeah.
No, what about you, Connor? Yeah, because you guys hosted the IOTX event. Like how was the turnout there compared to last year?
Yeah, turnout was great. It was actually even a little better than last year, even though last year we did it really big. I think there was probably 600 attendees last year. This year there was like 800. So yeah, definitely biggest DPIN event of the week. Shout out to the IOTX kind of events and social team for getting that done. Yeah, it was great to see like a lot of DPIN events on the calendar. On the whole like bell curve meme thing though, I want to get you all's perspective on this. Like it seems like, yeah, I would say meme coins on the left side, you know, DeFi is probably in the middle, at least right now, right? This take could age very poorly. AI for sure on the right in terms of like just absolutely taking off, pumping. But do we think like the PRN, like physical resource network sector of DPIN, like the Hive Mappers and the Heliums of the world, could that be like in the mid curve right now too? Because I just see Render like blowing past all-time highs. It's like 2x the all-time high now. Akash is coming from an all-time high. all the AI coins are, you know, making new all-time highs as well, but Helium's still like less than 20% of its all-time high. Some of the other tokens, you know, in the PRN subsector as well. So not to FUD deep in or FUD our bags, but it's just like, I would love to see some more kind of movement and momentum from the PRN subsector of DeepIn. So curious where you guys think that falls on the bell curve meme spectrum.
Yeah, so you started, but I kind of agree. Like, I'm not extremely bearish on the physical resource side, but like just being at ETH Denver, I didn't really see many like projects or like interesting projects building in that sector. Obviously you have some like, you had some interesting like energy projects there. However, like there wasn't anything that really caught my attention. And even within like the compute or the digital resource network side of things, like a lot of the projects that were emerging there were just like copycats of some of like the big names. Like you had like a Render knockoff. You've got so many like GPU networks, which we can talk about later, but all these networks are trying to basically mimic what Akash, IONET, so on is doing. And like, that's where I see a lot of the like attention being targeted towards within DeepIn. But like, when you look at the actual like physical resource network side of things, like HiveMapper, I think like HiveMapper Demo, some of those blue chips will do really well, but it just seems like, you know, the rest of the space isn't getting that much attention. But maybe, I don't know, Sal, Mahesh, you guys seeing something different?
Yeah, I'll take the other side of that, Sammy. You set me up perfectly here, which is to say that I think that is, by definition, the nature of the hardware projects is you're not going to see them at these events. They have these massive footprints that they have to curate, and they're not going to pick up 100,000 followers, subscribers, users on the basis of going to an event, because it's not just software at the end of the day. I think for companies that go to these conferences, like for AI in particular, it's so high value because the product is generally entirely virtual and something that you can interact with in real time and get some sort of a response function that makes you feel a certain way. You know, you use Corcel on BitTensor and you're like, wow, this is actually really, really cool. Whereas for the resource networks, it's really the usage, I think, and like the actual go to market and getting real customers that aren't crypto native necessarily, that will define sort of why these things end up being really successful medium term. So I take your point, but I think the reason you don't see the Heliums and the Xnets of the world necessarily being like the most loud and boisterous, or the Andrinos of the world being the most loud and boisterous at these events, is because for them to really work out at the end of the day, I think they have to deal with physical stakeholders that are, you know, just more traditional business focused, have a lot more loopholes to jump through, have a lot more service related functions to integrate into. And I think the result of that is just like physical networks don't necessarily have the biggest sort of benefit to their time coming out of going to conferences, is my take. The other side of that I would say is, I'll keep in mind that most of those networks are actually building on Solana, and this was an ETH event. And I think a lot of them didn't go on purpose because they try to go particularly to the ETH events. So, you know, to Sammy's point, I take your point. I think there's a lot in hardware that is slowing down that might not necessarily be as exciting as it was a year and a half ago, but I think there are real green shoots. And I keep pointing to Helium as this one example. I mean, they're at 60,000 subscriber NFTs. They just raised prices in Miami back to $20, which Sal thinks means there's like real demand that continues to come through. They're almost to 70% of usage going through their network in Miami, which is crazy, because on a 75 to 80% level, they start breaking even on a usage basis, which is insane. And I mean, if they're able to get that, I think they'll really be able to go nationwide and scale this. So I'll take the other side of that, Sammy, which is, I think you're right. Maybe there isn't the same kind of physical excitement for these kinds of things in person at these events, because it's not necessarily as fun of a topic to, you know, maybe discuss with your friends, and there aren't as many vectors to kind of attack. But by the same token, I don't think that means that they're slowing down. I think it just means that, like, unlike AI, where you get some usage and then you know very quickly something is going to work, the feedback cycle for, like, is this working in hardware networks is way, way longer. But I don't know. Connor, what do you think? You posed the question.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, the barrier to entry for contributors growth, social growth, contributor growth, everything is way higher for the PRN kind of subsector of DeepIn. Yeah, things like the contributor kind of social growth of grass, for instance, just could never happen with a helium. The like kind of sales cycle is much longer.
Yeah.
Everything just takes longer. Yeah. Hardware has to get manufactured. So yeah, hoping like the whole, I guess the narrative of the momentum will catch on some of the kind of older, more established blue chip deepens as well, like helium. But yeah, I mean, they are, that's true. Like the metrics you pointed out about the subscriber, I think they're at 65K now, subscribers. Like they're definitely making progress there. It just doesn't come necessarily quite as fast as some of the other projects.
Yeah, it's not noisy progress either.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Sam.
Yeah, what was interesting too is while like, I feel like there are a lot of like Western teams that are working on like the digital resource side of thing within DeepIn, such as like the cloud compute, the like, and like the AI side of things as well. However, I did see like there were a lot of like Asian-based teams that were building the actual like physical hardware side of things. And I think that just makes sense because like, you know, China is where it's like the home of hardware manufacturing. And so I think that's one really like interesting development is how, you know, like a lot of Asia seems to be getting really bullish on like the physical aspect side of DeepIn. So I don't know. I spoke with a lot of teams, a lot of Asian-based teams there that were building some interesting things. And so I just thought that divide was interesting. You've got like, you know, the European and American teams building like AI. Actually, there's a good amount of like Asian-based teams building AI things as well. But yeah, that was just kind of like an interesting little insight.
Yeah, makes total sense. Sal, what do you think?
Well, the stuff that I was most excited about, I think that will for the audience. I don't know when we're releasing this, but there will be in 2024 DeepIn Smart Rings, which I'm pretty excited about. I think there's a lot. There's like some really sick like form factors you can do on the health side that aren't as like bulky as necklaces or headbands or whatever other people are doing. And I think the Apple's room to be working on rings. There's obviously like Aura and Whoop are like decently big businesses, but I think there's like enough people educated out there now where you have to be like a certain level of fit and do some of the crazier wearables things, but wearing a ring is like a pretty low commitment, but like high value, high utility sort of proposition. So I'm pumped to see at least one of those pop out. One of our one company that I'm not going to out right now, but we will see 3D printed phone cases for the Solana Saga phones coming out in the next couple of months. I'm pretty excited about what just like if anyone hasn't played with like 3D printed shit is really cool.
Yeah, this is so classic. It's the three of us are just here vibing, chilling, shooting shit. And then Sal comes in with the business and he's got full takes ready. He's got things that he's seen. He's got the bearish side of everything. But let me tell you a very quick story, which is that, you know, Sal gave me a call. I think it was Thursday, and I don't get calls from Sal that often. He's like a pretty self-sufficient guy. And I got the text, bro, like three times on my phone, bro, bro, bro. I'm like, okay, shit. Like something must have really gone wrong. I pick up his phone call. I figure it's like either an amazing founder he's found or like something is really, really wrong in the business. Bro, I just met this girl. Can you introduce her to this founder for me? I think I might actually love her. We're not going to mention any names, but my boys out here at ETH Denver, all of these amazing DeepIn companies out there fucking simping.
Wait, hold up. He wants to connect a girl he met to a founder? Is she a VC or something?
Well, we're going to cut this conversation off here. I'm too specific now, so.
I'm dead. Outed.
Yeah, so sometimes deals is a pretty great funnel to get some digits.
Yeah.
Just keep in mind back of the envelope. Sal is extremely angry at me because he knows that woman might listen to our podcast. So this is definitely going to get included in the episode, and I can't wait for you to hear it.
Sal's texting Mahesh right now like, bro, 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 stop.
Study Sal's game.
Five missed calls from Sal. But anyway, Sal, no, that's awesome. Look, I think you're right. There was a ton of interesting projects that either launched or brought new features to bear at ETH Denver that just made it clear that there were so many use cases out there and so many projects that were doing just amazing things. You know, I'd love to double click a little bit on that as well. I know we've got Sammy here who co-hosted some pretty popular breakfasts as well as some events. Sammy, you know, what projects did you really think showed up to Eat Denver that you think are sort of slept on more broadly?
Yeah, so this might not come as a surprise to most people. Like, if you looked at my Twitter recently, it's pretty much become like a BitTensor shill account. But yeah, so like I still think BitTensor is kind of flying under the radar. And I still believe so even after attending ETH Denver. Although there were a good amount of people within these AI events who obviously knew about BitTensor, but like if you went outside of like an AI event and just asked like anybody else, they kind of had no clue what was going on. And even and this is pretty surprising alone, because like BitTensor right now is a top 25 or around that, top 25 by market cap project. And even the people who were interested in BitTensor or even held some BitTensor still like didn't fully understand what the hell it does, right? Like people either viewed it as like a training platform or a model discovery platform, when really like it's just this generalizable platform that could be used for any type of like digital commodity or to incentivize any type of digital commodity or resource. So yeah, I co-hosted this BitTensor breakfast with Anand, and he's at Canonical Ventures, and then Collab Currency. And it was crazy because like the waitlist was about 500 people, and we had like we rented this venue for around 100 people, and I think we exceeded that for sure. I think we let like 200 people in. But yeah, I felt so popular because everyone's like, "Hey, can you get me into this? Can you get me into this?" And I was like, "I'm sorry, I can't. We have a limit." But the type of talent in that room ranged from like people actually building subnets to, you know, these high profile investors to just to like contributors who are either validators or miners on within the ecosystem. And it just got me like so damn bullish on this project again, which like might not be entirely flying under the radar, but I still think that like within the general or like the overarching like crypto landscape, like a lot of people still don't understand just like how bullish of a project BitTensor is. And like, I'm going to cut myself off because I don't want to keep talking for like 20 minutes about BitTensor. But like outside of that, so, you know, if we refocus on AI, there's obviously compute and data, right? The compute sector has gotten tons of attention. However, like the data side, I think has been very underrepresented within crypto, and this is starting to change. So you have like the Wind or the Grass protocol, for example, which, disclaimer, I've invested in, but you know, they've just shifted towards you know, scraping data specifically for machine learning, and they're doing like data labeling, and there's a whole bunch of other like data labeling projects emerging now. You have like Bagel Database, which is doing a marketplace for data with vector embeddings. You have I think it's called Sahara, which just launched as well, which is doing like a data marketplace and allowing people to contribute data, label it, and then do some training. So I think we're on the brink of a lot of these AI protocols that were initially just doing compute starting to expand into integrating more like AI capabilities or features within their protocols. And then the last thing I'll kind of wrap up with, which is kind of related to that, is, you know, everyone's talking about the GPU shortage, and like while it does exist to some extent, like all the projects that I've talked to that like need GPUs, whether it's like, you know, decentralized training networks like Jensen and Tremero, or, you know, decentralized inference networks, like they've all had success sourcing GPUs from like big data centers. So like the supply side is no longer the issue. I think the real issue now is going to be demand. So that wasn't being talked about at all. You know, everyone still thinks like the supply side is like the bottleneck. I think that's going to change here real quick. So that was like those were a few interesting insights that I kind of uncovered at the event.
Yeah, I'll echo that last part on
GPU. What about you, Connor?
GPU. Yeah, I'll echo the last part on GPU shortages. Like, I've started to come across some teams who have access to GPUs, and they're like, "Oh, let us know if you like have some other deepened projects that need GPU supply." Like, we're looking for demand. So I don't know. I don't know exactly. I mean, Sam, you probably have a better idea, like, where the whole GPUs are in massive demand and, like, there's not enough supply, like, where that came from. I mean, I remember seeing, like, a lot of tweets and stuff about it. But, yeah, it seems to not really be the case anymore. Not sure what happened there. Do you think some, like, do you think more supplies just come online, or what do you think the shift has been?
I think it's, yeah, there's been more supply that's come online, and some of these data centers are actually having latent supply between different jobs. However, like, I don't think that should be, like, you know, because if you are relying on these latent resources from these data centers, you have to also realize that they can be pulled back at any time. And so that kind of prevents also, like, the ability to run more, like, stable jobs by developers. So all that to say, yeah, I think it's just become, like, if these projects are willing to pay for these resources from a data center, it's the same thing as, like, a developer coming in and wanting to access it too. So I think they've just, like, they're just forming partnerships right now. And whether that's, like, through, you know, giving equity into their projects or whatnot, I think there's, like, some creative ways that some of these projects can figure out how to source the GPUs.
Yeah, no, I've definitely awesome. Seen that at Iotex too. I think both sides of the market are growing, basically. Like, there's a ton of new deep ends launching. I think Sal, you had a tweet, you know, over under 250 deep end TGEs by, was it year end or by end of 2025? So give us, like, 18 months or something. But so, yeah, so there's, like, the supply.
I think you're right. I think 6 months, but I think 250 in the next 6 months, but Mahesh told me I was too bullish. So we're changing it to
crazy.
But definitely this year for sure.
I think we've got a pretty good handle on, like, the market and projects that want to launch. And, like, it seems like a lot of new token launches, but I mean, that would be good.
Look, my point to Sal on that was very simple, which is you can have 250 projects. It means one of two things. It either means there's a lot of high quality projects in deep end that are looking to launch, or it means you're about to just get hit by an avalanche of shit. I'm pretty sure it's the former, which is why I push Sal to be a little more,
like, a lower number.
Circumspect with the numbers that he puts out there. But for what it's worth, I mean, like, it's crazy what we're seeing in the portfolio right now. I think if we are representative, I think Sal isn't even being bullish. For what it's worth. So that should be pretty awesome. And just to double click on that, like, PSA to any founder out there that's building a deep end project at the earliest stage that's looking for capital, the foundations are doing a lot of investing right now. And if you reach out to one of us, we can try to get you connected to the foundations as well. So that's a really, really good place to look for capital if you're an early stage deep end founder right now who's really looking for that first slug of capital to get the project running and going. But guys, this has been awesome. Really great to hear sort of a little bit of the alpha and all of your takes on what was going on in the ground. I guess the last question here, and maybe I'll start with Connor and then end on Sammy. You know, if someone was sitting on their ass and didn't make it out to the event, read me, what would they have really missed? What are the last couple of takeaways you might have in terms of just alpha for people out there and what they might have missed if they were at home?
Yeah, I think you would have missed, like, the kind of energy and vibes that were occurring there. There's nothing like being in person with people. Like, I actually really like the whole record podcast remotely, have meetings remotely way of doing things, but there is something special about being in person, especially with people that you've been through the absolute trenches with, like, you know, us four on this call, a lot of the other kind of very, very early deep in folks. Like, it's been a crazy 4 years from the kind of Helium run up in 2019-2020 to the terrible kind of years of the bear market and how painful that was. And then there's kind of a collective, like, sigh of relief that happened a couple of months ago. And now there's a lot of excitement about deep in crypto broadly as we break all time highs for Bitcoin, and kind of enter into price discovery mode. So yeah, just very, very excited for the next year or two in terms of having some tailwinds back on our side kind of macroeconomically. And it was really, really refreshing to see a bunch of people in person, and kind of feel the collective excitement that we all have together as a space.
Yeah, and I'll echo what Connor said too. Like, recently I've been trying to optimize my life more for like in-person, real life human connections, especially because like the last 6 months, you could say I've just spent it like in my dungeon, working on Twitter, watching the charts, basically like you. And that just sucks the life out of you, man. You know, it's like just being able to like meet people in person. And so like this is going to be also almost, I guess, like some advice I could share with people is that what I've learned just attending with these events is that obviously we all know like networking is really important, but like the career opportunities that come your way, just like meeting people in person and just like coming off as like a normal dude, like are just huge, right? Like it's made me realize like you don't have to be like the smartest gigabrain in the room. Like you just need to be able to, and like this is saying something in crypto, like you just need to be like a semi-normal people, because not that many normal people like exist within crypto to succeed, right? And so like just being able to like being in Denver, like, you know, I found my way in like numerous angel deals. There were like numerous job opportunities that were just being thrown at me. It's like people are throwing alpha at me so that I could just like write about them. So it's just like being in person in general is the real alpha and the real edge that you can have versus people who are just spending all their time online, like airdrop farming and, you know, like threading and so on. So that was just like a moment for me where I kind of realized that, I need to go to more conferences.
That's awesome. And that's a great place to leave it at. It sounds like there was an amazing amount of energy there that year. And thanks so much for listening.
Sweet.
Thank you, guys. See you guys.